The next presenter is David Kearns, and he'll be presenting on value of BT technology for bollworm management, current situation, and future sustainability.
Green means good, yellow is green means left, and I'll stand up.
Well, thank you. Well, I think Dr. Yang just said it all. I could probably just sit back down. So, anyway, so I'm going to reiterate a lot of what Dr. Yang went over and give a few more perspectives, at least what we're seeing in the field as well. Again, this is a joint project. I'm going to present some data from a lot of my colleagues from the Mid-South Working Group and the work that we did at Texas A&M as well. We're looking at the evolution of transgenics, BTs, and cotton. I mean, we look back to, 1996 is when we first saw Bogard introduced into our system. Of course, that was a single gene, single toxin event. Never was meant to take out cotton bollworm. The target was budworm. So we don't want to lose sight of that. So it was always a little bit weak. You saw Dr. Yang's data. It's that particular toxin is appears to be fairly ineffective. And then saw Bogard 2 introduced with the Cry 2, and then we start a lot greater efficacy toward cotton bollworm. Wide strike Cry 1 has the Cry 1 and the Cry 1F. And then Twin Link, which is very similar to Bogard 2 with Cry 1AB and Cry 2AE. And then as we move into the future, and well, I guess where we're at now is with the VIP technologies, whether it's Wide Strike 3, Bogard 3, or Twin Link Plus. But the thing, and Dr. Yang pointed this out as well, there's a lot of homogeneity between these crops, corn and cotton. And so when we look at resistance management for BT technologies, what happens in one crop is going to drastically affect what's going to be happening in the other crop. So let's look at our current situation. So I'm going to reiterate some of what Dr. Yang presented. I'm going to look at it in a little bit different context. And again, we're going to look at the bioassay data. This will be the exact same data that he presented. And again, just slightly different presentation. So I'm not going to go into all the methods. And what this is like a radar chart. And so what I've done is for each population goes around the outside perimeter of this chart. And I just plotted the resistance ratios around it. The blue line, that's Cry1AC. And the green line is Cry2AB2. And looking at this, remember too on these, particularly with the Cry1AC, the outer points are actually probably much further out. This is just as far as we could put them because in reality we could not measure the true resistance ratios because if you can't develop a probit line because they won't die, you can't measure the LC50. So these are actually much bigger than this. And the same can be true for the outside line of that Cry2AB tube. And the red circle represents 10, a tenfold difference. And based on the going thoughts at this time, we want to stay within that red circle. Once we get out of that red circle, then we have resistance issues, at least based on the bioassays. So you can see from this, Cry1AC, there's not a single population that falls within in that red circle. And for Cry2AB2, there's just a few. And so it does look like we have a definite problem with these two BT technologies. Same can be said for Cry1F. Now, honestly, the radar chart doesn't work so great because our highest resistance ratios we could actually calculate we can't calculate them. They're off the chart. But they end up being at least 5 or higher. But if you look on the table, you look at our highest dose of Cry1F, which is 4 micrograms or 4,000 nanograms, you know, we're seeing about 94% mortality in our susceptible strain and usually around 10 or 11 or less in our filter strains. So essentially, Cryo-NF is on these field collected populations is essentially ineffective. Now, the good news was the VIP technology, and as Dr. Yang pointed out, it appears to be very toxic, and these field populations are very sensitive to it. And in fact, they tend to be more sensitive than our laboratory strain. And you can, on this chart, now, these are negative values. You can see the red is on 10, zero's about 80% of the way up, and then the values are all negative. And that's just because the field populations were so much more sensitive to the VIP than even our laboratory strain. So let's, for us to really have resistance, and resistance to be an issue, it has to manifest in the field. It's one thing to take these in and measure it in the laboratory, but it's another thing to show that we're seeing field failures. And then something that we can describe as a field-evolved resistance. This is data that we collected this last year from a trial we had in College Station, Texas. In this trial, we had non-BT, wide strike 3, a Bogar 2, and a twin link. And on the chart on, I guess that's your left, is percent damage with each technology. The squares are in the maroon bars and the whites, the bowls. And ideally what we want to do is try to keep this injury below the red line that's indicated here. This is a single point of time. In this particular test, we had just one big massive egg lay. And so this injury represents a single point in time when we measure this. So we're running about 55% injury of squares and bowls in our non-BT. Wide strike did not significantly differ. It was running about 30%. Wide strike 3 was all squares. We saw no injury to the bowls. Although it did exceed our red line, it's running about 15% injury. Bogar 2 was running about a little over 10, and twin link close to 18. And we took yields on these, and we also split these plots. So we'd split these plots, and we'd spray half and leave the other half untreated. And the other graph represents the yields. The white bars were where we sprayed. The maroon bars were where we left it untreated. And you can see the yield benefit from spraying. And at least in this particular trial, we only measured benefit in the non-BT and the wide strike in this particular case. And so, and here's an important point, too. Our non-BT yielded very well in this test. And what I tell growers is, You need to plant your varieties based on their yield potential. You just don't go and pick, oh, yeah, well, I want that technology. The most important point is picking the genetics of the variety agronomically and how it's going to perform on your farm. And then you manage that variety based on the technology. I wanted to present a little bit of information on Bogar 3. It's the same setup with damage in the first chart and yield in the second. And in this particular case, the Bogar 3, which contains the VIP technology, never reached the red line, our target line. Bogar 2 did, and as well as the non-BT. And in our spray versus non-spray test, Bogar 2 and the non-BT both benefited from treating with Prevathon. I wanted to present another test because this is a little bit different situation, and this is one of Dr. Stewart's trials in Jackson, Tennessee. And he had a situation where he had fairly constant bollworm pressure season long. And so what we're looking at here is percent damage over time from August 10th all the way to September the 5th. And the you can see the non-BT is the black line, and when he starts doing his rain, about 30% injury, spikes all the way up to near 80, but then stays fairly consistent through the rest of the season at about 40% injury. So he had significant pressure. Wide strike and all the other technologies started fairly low and then kind of crept up for the most part through the season. The only The only line that did not exceed the injury level in this particular case was for his wide strike three planting. It did not exceed our 6% target. But if you look at his yields, I mean, he saw some drastic results from spraying some of these plots. In fact, he saw a significant difference with all of them, even our wide strike three, which never, like I said, it never exceeded our target, but yet he did see a yield increase from spraying it with Prevthon. Every one of his plots benefited statistically from being sprayed for bollworms with Prevthon. So our data suggests that we have field-evolved or field-selected resistance to Cry1AC and Cry2AB2. In the test that Dr. Yang commented on, we had 14 populations tested to Cry1AC. Every single one of them exceeded our 10% or our tenfold resistance ratio. That's 100%. For Cry2AB2, on 13 populations, 75% of the populations we tested exceeded this tenfold resistance ratio, and 69% of them exceeded greater than 30. A lot of them were higher. We couldn't measure a lot of them. We just couldn't measure what that level because we could not develop a probit line because we didn't get high enough mortality. Same could be said with Cry1F. Field populations, we had all of them had very low mortality, less than 12%. And what we see in the field is wide strike, Cry1AC, Cry1F is ineffective and differs very little from what we see with our conventional or non-BT varieties. VIP3A looks good. We see no resistance to this technology. Resistance ratio is actually negative. And we do see that resistance has been manifest in the field. I want to go just to give you an idea of what we see in Texas. Texas is real variable and as far as bollworm pressure. So in the valley, we have very low pressure and no bollworm applications. Low to moderate, as you move up the coast, you start seeing a little bit more spraying. And then it gets worse and worse as we move up the coast. And we treated as much as 90% of our cotton, our BT cotton acres in some areas.
Am I out of time?
Okay. In the Blacklands, moderate to high, and again, a lot of spraying going on in this area. As you move out west, we have low bollworm pressure. You don't see a lot of spraying, but there's still some that takes place. Even just very little far west, and then up in the panhandle, where there's a little bit more pressure, you'll see a little bit more applications. And it's not that I'm convinced we have resistance that's widespread. It's just, I mean, if you have low pressure, you're just not going to pick it up. So the value of BT technology, and this is what I'll sum this up with. To a grower, the value of BT, they question it. They say this no longer has value to me. If I have to spray the technology twice, you know, what value is there? But I would say to them, we can't forget what we developed BT technology for, and it was not initially bollworms. It was tobacco budworms, pink bollworms. It has value. It has value on those pests. If we went to a system where we went back to just non-BT cotton, then I guarantee you it wouldn't be very long and we'd be fighting tobacco budworms again. So it does have value. It's just not perceived by the growers. And a lot of them have just simply forgotten the value that we see with these technologies. So, and I have a lot of growers very, very interested in the VIP technologies. This is the wave of the future. The problem is, we have a lot of reliance now on the VIP gene. If we have resistance to Cry1AC, Cry2AB2, then all that pressure is falling on this VIP technology. It is not a strong event in cotton. It is not a strong event. It's a low dose event. Now it works, but it's a low dose event. And if we continue to select these populations in corn like we've done with the crop proteins, if we continue to select these, if we start seeing a lot of corn moving into the southern landscape and we start developing these populations on this VIP corn, this technology is not going to hold up. And that's the big 2,000-pound gorilla is VIP corn. And that's what needs to be addressed. We're not planting refuges like we're supposed to yet. And that's where we've gotten where we're at. With that, I think I'm out of time. Thank you.
We've got time for questions.